I'm Jack Howe, host of the new Barron's Streetwise podcast on business and investing. This week, I focus on Disney and how the pandemic might change theme parks, movies, and television. Here's Disney Executive Chairman Bob Iger.
Just as we now do bag checks for everybody that goes into our parks, it could be that at some point we add a component of that that takes people's temperatures.
Disney Beyond the Pandemic on this week's Barron's Streetwise. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, April 15th. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. Because of the coronavirus outbreak, millions of people have been trying to access government services to file for unemployment online. And they've been running into a lot of difficulties because despite recent pushes to modernize state and local IT systems, they're not ready to handle the traffic. Our reporter Angus Lowton will join us to explain after these headlines. We reported that Amazon has been hiring tens of thousands of new employees trying to keep up with demand during the pandemic. Now, at least three Amazon warehouse workers say they were fired, and several others were reprimanded after they pushed for better working conditions at those warehouses. For its part, Amazon denies that these employees were punished for organizing. Instead, the company says employees did things like violate social distancing protocols or speak inappropriately to managers. But labor organizers allege that these firings are part of a pattern of Amazon silencing employee demonstrators. Here's our reporter, Sebastian Herrera.
Right. The reason why these firings are notable is because of the history that exists. There was a widely covered firing in Staten Island in March of a worker that organized. And then even recently in the past week, there's firings of corporate employees, so not warehouse workers, that have been outspoken about mainly climate issues as it relates to Amazon. And again, with all these different firings, Amazon, you know, says that they were fired for reasons that were not related to organizing. And of course, we should note that firing an employee for the sole reason of organizing is illegal. And so that would be, you know, troublesome if that was the actual reason that they provided.
Technology has been filling in some of the gaps as we adapt to stay-at-home orders. We've been talking about that. Telemedicine is one of them. Virtual doctor's appointments with the company Teladoc have doubled since the outbreak began in the U.S. That's according to the company's earnings guidance, which was released on Tuesday. The numbers are being seen as confirmation that the telemedicine industry is thriving during the pandemic. But will the trade continue after stay-at-home orders have expired? Our reporter Sarah Krause has more.
There are signs that once you prompt someone to do this one time and you sort of demystify it, that it becomes either part of how they think about the healthcare tools that are available to them and therefore reach for it again in the future. I think it does depend largely, though, on satisfaction levels and the level of care that people feel that they've gotten from their, you know, remote visits. And some of this is temporary in the sense that there have also been regulatory changes that have helped stoke this very swift change. So, for example, HIPAA, some of the data privacy and patient privacy rules that existed in the healthcare world have been sort of temporarily waived, which allows, you know, for example, patients to use FaceTime, you know, the sort of video app on their iPhones, you know, rather than having to go through a formal portal provided by a telehealth service that it was totally compliant. So there's been a number of sort of incremental regulatory changes that have helped bring on this very quick embrace of it.
That's not the only way tech is aiding the response to the coronavirus. Many governments are using location data to map out things like who's come into contact with the virus and whether social distancing orders are working. Some countries like China have tapped into their existing surveillance networks to do this. But due to privacy concerns, that approach is not really possible in the U.S. But local governments are finding alternative ways to collect that data.
Governments are trying to say, what do we already know? What do we have at our disposal that is being voluntarily given by, you know, people making inbound calls to us that we could better harness? So, for example, you know, Seattle is testing software that sort of AI and analyzes 911 callers' voices. You know, so it's collecting things like, you know, coughs in the background or the raspiness, you know, trying to understand where there might be sick people. And sort of overlay that where they have known cases, try to understand hotspots in their jurisdiction. You know, the other factor that is helping in all of this too is that 911 calls now have increasingly precise location data, which is valuable to city officials as well. So most people use their cell phones to call 911, and Apple and Android devices automatically share location data with emergency call centers using software from a startup called RapidSOS. So there's also, you know, sort of a stronger pipe of location data that's feeding into these public systems.
And speaking of public information databases, your state's website is probably seeing a lot more traffic than usual, and it might not be ready to handle it. That's after the break.
I'm Jack Howe, host of the new Barron Streetwise podcast on business and investing. This week, I focus on Disney and how the pandemic might change theme parks, movies, and television. Here's Disney Executive Chairman Bob Iger.
Just as we now do bag checks for everybody that goes into our parks, it could be that at some point we add a component of that that takes people's temperatures.
Disney Beyond the Pandemic on this week's Barron Streetwise. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Since the coronavirus outbreak began, millions of people around the country have filed for unemployment. And the numbers of new jobless claims have had to be revised up multiple times. That's because many people who were trying to file for unemployment couldn't, because the website to do so kept crashing. That's just one sign that state and federal IT systems are being stress tested at the moment, and many of them are struggling and failing to keep up. Our reporter Angus Lowton joins us to explain. Angus, thanks for being here.
Great to be back.
All right. So almost everyone has been to their state's website to try to apply for things in the past. Give us a sense of how up to date the state IT systems are right now.
Certainly. I think it wouldn't be quite fair to say that these IT managers at the state level were caught flat footed. It's just that they've been struggling for years and years to update some of these much older systems using COBOL, a very old developer language that people simply don't use today. One of the problems, of course, is that the tenure of state IT leaders is pretty short. It's only about 3 years, and that's much lower than it is in the private sector. Part of that has to do with it's an appointed position to be chief information officer for a state. And of course, when the governor changes, you're out. So it's hard to get traction to modernize some of these systems. And as you say, we're all familiar with that when we try to use some of the online services that are available.
That seems like it would create a huge problem. You mentioned there's an old language that they're using. Why haven't they updated these languages and services for so long?
Well, I mean, these things cost money, first of all. So trying to eke that out of a state budget is always a bit of an uphill battle. And secondly, in the private sector anyway, a lot of the return on investment for updating these systems and being able to use much more innovative tools for customer services, it's easy to make the case to the board because there's an immediate return on investment. They're revenue generating when you're able to get these things in place. So it's an easy sell. At the state level, it's not quite the same because the services essentially are free. And making the case that we're trying to keep up with the private sector in some of the services that people have become familiar with is a little trickier. As a result, you find that a lot of state CIOs spend a great deal of their time doing the proverbial keeping the lights on, making sure these older systems are running and able to handle the daily operation.
Yeah, obviously, daily operations are normally something that these states have a pretty good idea of how much demand there's going to be. Right now, obviously, they're seeing that demand rise for a few reasons. What are they trying to do to mitigate the problem or even adapt on the fly?
Exactly. And you're right. These systems were not built to handle this level of traffic. And I don't think anybody foresaw the numbers of unemployment benefits that folks were filing for online. So state CIOs are they have two areas of focus. One is, as we said, keeping these systems running so that the basic services, the underlying infrastructure is operating. And then the next is responding directly to the pandemic, trying to find new ways, innovative ways, things, building whole new services that weren't available a month ago or even a few weeks ago, and having that underlying infrastructure to be able to handle that. The state CIO in New York, for instance, which was obviously hit pretty hard by the pandemic. The way he put it is that we're you know, trying to rebuild the airplane while we're in flight. So you can imagine it's a very challenging situation.
What kind of updates are they seeking? Do we have some examples?
Certainly. New York is a great example. Earlier in the month, they ordered new servers, for instance, to have that underlying system in place and to be able to boost capacity. And what they've done with that is created a whole lot of new tools on the website. They've rebuilt the website, but also the tools that are available, for instance, online self-screening. So New York residents who feel like they might have some symptoms, for free, go online to the state website and sort of self-screening and see if they actually need to go to a hospital or seek some other help. They've also set up real-time data, so you can get a much bigger picture of how and where the pandemic is spreading in New York State anyway, and all kinds of information services.
You mentioned how difficult it is to make the sell to state administrators that they need to invest in modernizing their IT systems. Is the silver lining here that we could be seeing improvements to these systems because of the pandemic?
Well, the analysts, industry analysts I spoke to certainly think so. There's never been more pressure from the public to modernize these systems. They're really getting a sense of how old and antiquated they are. And the case for digital government has never been stronger, not least to manage what's happening today. But people are going to get used to being able to do these services online, these and others, and it's very hard to go back. So once the genie is out of the bottle, as they say, it would be hard to suddenly erase these systems and go back to the old way of doing things.
All right. Reporter Angus Lowton, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We are still taking your work from home tech stories and questions. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be back with us later in the week to share her favorite tips and solutions with us. You can still leave us a voicemail at the number in the description, or you can email Joanna at joanna.stern@wsj.com. And that was your tech news briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.